Hello, and welcome to the Well Collab Feminine Leadership Podcast. I am Tammy Zadunik, founder of the Well Collab, and your host for today. Our podcast features feminine leadership principles and women leading both in their professional and personal lives. Let's get started.
So my name's Christina. I am sitting here today because I don't even know where to start. When I was a kid, I played a lot of sports, and then I went into theater because it was fun, and my theater degree was what kind of, you know, initiated my career, which spent about 15 give or take years in this province, working primarily in theater, but also in film and TV and, you know, voiceover type stuff. And then I got divorced. And I wasn't a dual income household anymore, and I had to make some changes. So I pivoted and I went back to school, and I focused on a business type education after that. I got an MBA. Well, that factors in to this conversation in a significant way. I got an MBA, and then I started working at the university. I work for what it's called the Clinical Learning Resource Center, but it's a healthcare simulation center. And that's where I continue to work to this day.
So I met Christina doing a photo shoot.
It's tricky for a photographer because the space is not forgiving and the lighting is not forgiving.
And yeah, I like to stay in one thing for too long.
Yeah.
So for me, the fast pace in tricky lighting is the challenge that I enjoy.
Yeah.
Trying to make the best of it, trying to work with people who aren't models.
Yeah.
So sort of all these limiting factors.
Yeah.
Kind of where I thrive.
Yeah.
When everything is perfectly set up, I have a bit of a harder time.
Well, yeah, because then it just feels like there's no room to play. And I think the magic happens when you can play.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk about how creativity doesn't pay. Just for a second. Photography, you can get a bit into corporate commercial and you can get paid better.
Yeah.
But it's still a bit of a fight. And also it does kill your creativity. So often when you're in more of that commercial corporate that does pay, you're actually not being an artist.
No.
In that way that you really desire. Mm-hmm. So when you get into something like the art,
yeah.
Why are we not paid? What do we have to do?
Super good question. That's something that I have actually thought about a lot because the hustle culture is real if you're trying to be an actor specifically, like, because that's where my background was. Like, I definitely know that it's tough for all of the other jobs in the creative industries, for sure. I personally think that art should be publicly accessible until the government subsidizes all of the development of the arts. But then, of course, then you have a situation where the government is deciding what is art and what's not. And so then that's problematic and all that kind of stuff. So until they are just like, no, here's just a big bag of money. You can do with it what you want. But that's the situation that would need to happen in order for the arts to be accessible to everyone at all times. Until then, it's always going to be the balance of trying to make sure that, like for a theater, like Persephone, for example, their challenge is pay for it when the costs are rising for everyone on every level. So pay for the production, but don't transfer that cost onto the audience. So keeping those ticket prices at a place where people will pay for it, right?
So yeah. I mean, I feel it in the wealth in this business.
Definitely.
I would love accessibility for all women to be able to like access feminine leadership skills. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like feminine leadership at every table, equity,
yep,
doesn't have to be the majority, but just equity is, yep, all I'm really looking for, would solve a lot of these things. And mm-hmm, I feel like women value the arts. We think about our kids. So we think about how their brains are developing, and we know that arts is really important for brain development. I mean, my kids go to an art school, mm-hmm, because I chose that instead of a different language.
Yep.
I just really love what the arts offers for kids.
Yep.
But yeah, we tend to think about that. So how do we get, I mean, I always think like I'm such a idealist, I guess. Like I'm like, everything is possible. We just need the right people in the table. But I think what it limits to is decision. I know for the Well, I didn't want to be a nonprofit and I don't want to be associated with certain government institutions because I don't want them to tell me what I can or cannot talk about.
Yeah.
I feel like it really limits our freedom. And especially, I guess it's my artist inside in me that even at the Well, I want the freedom to be able to have a conversation with you and say whatever I want to say.
Yeah.
And I want you to be able to say whatever you want to say. And I don't want to worry about our sponsors.
Right.
So how do you find the right sponsors for the Persephone, you know, or for the Well? That are still can allow freedom.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the minute you, as a corporate entity, give money, you have a vested interest in what's being created because it reflects your values. And so there's no corporate philanthropy. I don't think that it actually exists. There's always a reason why you choose to give money to Kids Sport versus Persephone versus the Children's Hospital, for example. It's all marketing. And so we're in a place where the arts, they're bought and sold all of the time.
Yeah.
And those people who are not commodifying are broke.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So there we go.
There we go.
So it's like you see people on stage in the arts. You see people about like dancers. I used to dance. There's no money for dancers.
No.
They do get some accolade and fame.
Sure.
And it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. But in terms of thinking just because someone is well known does not mean they're well compensated.
No.
For what they're doing.
No.
And it is an assumption.
Yeah, I think it is an assumption. But there's a lot of weird assumptions in this province about the arts. Like, I'm going to throw my own dad under the bus because he used to say things to me like, when are you going to get a job? And I'd be like, I have a job. And he'd be like, no, a real job. And I'm like, okay, like, I don't know how to talk to you about this, Dad, because like, you watch TV, you watch movies, you listen to music, and so you want to consume the product of the arts. You want to be a consumer of the arts, but you don't think that it's a real job. Is it a real job for the artists that you consume, or is it just not a real job for your daughter?
It's not a reliable job.
And he doesn't want to see me struggle. He wants my bills to be paid, and he just wants to know that I'm okay. But under his idea of what okay looks like,
parenting plays a huge role in this. My dad said to me, do what makes you happy in life and you won't depart from it. Or he just meant follow what brings you joy.
Yeah.
And do that for a living. And my dad has lived his life doing that and not making a huge amounts of money.
Right.
He's now 80.
Right.
He's the happiest person I know.
Yep.
And he just does his thing and they have enough. They don't travel.
Right.
They don't
right.
Well, but they're fine.
Right.
And I really look at them and go, I'm good with that.
Right.
You know, when you talk to like people who talk about retirement with you.
Yeah.
Like how much money I have to have.
Yep.
To retire. Like, who?
Yeah.
I totally. Like, this, let's talk about what my values are.
Yeah.
You know, rather than what your values are, you projecting them onto me. So financial planners will project their values onto you. Your dad will project his values onto you.
100%.
My dad valued, my dad saw struggle and he saw an unhappy mother and valued joy every day.
Yeah.
So he's not like, you have to see him. He's not like, I mean, me neither. We're not like rainbows and unicorns all the time, but we are happy at like a deep level.
Yeah.
This won't be live before elections, but we have election coming up next. It's happening right now, actually. Mm-hmm. And they don't value the arts.
No.
And it is so important for mental health.
That's very, very, very classic ADHD, where we got into a really interesting conversation about not the thing.
Yeah. And I just love it.
Here we are. We got there eventually.
This is what people are, you know, I just want real conversations for people.
Yeah.
That's really, I don't want to be like, oh no, we have to like get back on track. No, let's just talk about what's on our mind.
Yeah.
And there's going to be so much wisdom that comes out of that. They get to get like the little fly on the wall of hearing what we're saying, what we're
doing. Oh, I love that.
Because it's just our conversation.
Yeah.
We hardly know each other.
Right, but
we're meeting right now.
But people that have ADHD personalities, they find each other.
Yeah, the Well's full.
Yeah. I mean, all of my best friends, right? We find each other. And it's, I mean, so one of my best friends in the whole entire world, we met in grade 12 and hit it off right away. Shout out to Courtney. And I think one of the reasons why we've maintained this friendship for so long is because we don't judge each other for the stuff that neurotypical people tend to judge us for. We give each other so much grace. And we see each other. We don't have to mask in front of each other. It's just like instant forgiveness for all of the things. So I think that's why we find each other and we keep each other.
Yeah. I just feel like the ADHD mind is so brilliant.
Well, yeah.
My son came in the other day and he's like, I think I have ADHD.
Tell me more.
But everyone's labeling and like, who cares? Like, who cares? And I said, you know what? It's great information to have.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is, how do you work with your brain if it's like that?
Yeah.
Not now you don't. Now you have an excuse.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But how do you function then? How do you know it's superpower? Mm-hmm. How do you figure out what you're really good at? Get supports for the things you're not, mm-hmm. you're not as good at. Mm-hmm. And then run with it because it's like the greatest adventure.
Yeah. So, oh my God, there's so many things that I want to say and want to talk about. So, first of all, my daughter was diagnosed when she was about 9. And it was just because of something that her therapist had said to us. And she said, you know, I obviously can't diagnose, but my daughter said this word or this phrase. And it was like, I just don't feel like I'm like the other kids. Like they are sort of a homogenous group of people and I'm different than them. And she said, you know, I can't diagnose, but that's pretty classic ADHD kid thing to say. And I was like, okay, all right, well, we'll talk to the doctor. And so we filled out the forms and diagnosis. So it was when I was looking into things to help her that I was like, this is me. Like, I'm seeing myself reflected in everything that I'm reading. And at that time, it didn't really matter to me whether or not I had a diagnosis because I was still working in theater. My life was set up in such a way that, like, it wasn't negatively impacting me, or so I thought. And then I went into my master's degree, my MBA, and it was a struggle. And it was in my financial accounting course where a few things happened and I like broke. I can't do this. I need something. I need meds. I need counseling. I need something. So for me, pursuing a diagnosis was about getting support structures in place for me. But what I didn't anticipate was the validation. So getting the diagnosis where the doctor said, yeah, no, that's your classic. It's like, okay. Because you go in there and you're like, oh no, like what if they say I don't have ADHD? What if they say I actually just am lazy? Right? Like that's it. The imposter syndrome of having ADHD was very real. I was sitting in front of this doctor and like, this was like a middle-aged. He was like close to retirement. Yeah, I know. I keep forgetting I'm not 20 anymore. He was like close to retirement, a dude. And I was expecting him to be like, just get it together. There's nothing wrong with you. Just figure it out, girl. But no, he said to me, no, it's classic. You're classic. You meet all of the criteria. And I was like, I don't know how to feel about this right now. Mm-hmm. Right? Like on one hand, I felt, oh, I am like defective. But on the other hand, I went, oh, I am defective. Yeah. So it's that big catch 22. But suddenly there was validation. And like, I was 38. Yeah. So my whole life, I was just thinking about like, you're not a slob. You're not lazy. You don't have the attention span of a newt. Thank you, Dad. You know, like all of these things started to fall into place. And then I started thinking about how my marriage broke down and all of the things that had actually contributed to where I had found myself in my life at that time. And I was like, oh, okay. And I'm giving myself like a ton of forgiveness for all of those mistakes that I made because I didn't know. And I was chasing dopamine. But the validation that came from it was so, it like washed my soul. So I hear a lot of people who are self-diagnosed, and that's entirely okay for all of the reasons that you said, that you can still learn so much about yourself. But having a doctor sit there and say, yep, you fit the criteria, you're classic, you have this diagnosis, brought me so much validation. And it also gave me access to medication, treatment. And then because I was in school at the time, the university gave me access to student wellness, where I found the best counselor, ADHD coach, who changed so many things for me.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, can we shout them out?
Yeah, his name is Devin. Devin was a mental health nurse, and he was working for student wellness at the university. And he gave me some of the best advice. I forgot to mention this was also at the beginning of COVID. Luckily, I got my diagnosis just pre-COVID, so I had all of those supports in place when the world broke. Yeah.
I want to know about some of these tools, though.
So, okay, I guess the first place to start is explaining just what it is, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions when we talk about attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which is what it's called. That name sucks. It's not accurate. What ADHD is it's like a brain difference. Like, it's a difference in the way that your brain works. So it's primarily impacts neurotransmitters. And so I don't even think I could get overly scientific about this, but essentially it's an inability to use the dopamine that your brain produces, and it doesn't produce as much. And so it's basically a filtering problem. So your brain is unable to filter through stimuli. Everything gets through. So see, you're like, this is resonating with you. So as a person with ADHD, you just have no ability to regulate where you place your attention, the things that you are interested in, and the places where you focus. So it's very noticeable, like kids. So let's say you're like a little 9-year-old kid and you're sitting at your desk, and instead of being able to pay attention to the teacher, like a kid that's neurotypical would be able to just focus on the teacher. This is the thing that's important. I can focus on this now. A little kid with ADHD is sitting in that desk and they're noticing how uncomfortable they are in that desk. They're noticing how their socks are rubbing weird on their feet. They're noticing noises in the hallway. They're noticing noises outside. They're noticing the one kid who's like clicking their pen or whatever. All of the stimuli is as important as the one thing they're meant to be focusing on, because the brain can't filter out irrelevant stimuli. Constantly exhausted.
Because it's so hard to focus on what we're supposed to be focused on.
Right. Yeah. And so that's why, like, if you think you're a person with ADHD and you are like having sensory overload all the time, it's very real. It's because your brain can't filter out what's not important.
Hence anxiety
in addition. I call it the trifecta. So kids with ADHD are more likely, I think it's something like 20% more likely to experience severe depression and anxiety, because, well, just all the things, like you're constantly trying to focus, but you're also being told, pay attention. Why can't you pay attention? Like my dad's favorite, you have the attention span of a newt. Thank you for that. I mean, they're just doing their best. It was the 90s. What did they know?
Yeah, the 90s.
Yeah, what did they know? Yeah. And you're so different. And you're like, I mean, for me, I could not remember appointments. I could not pay my parking tickets. I just forgot. Like, why did you forget that? I don't know. But yeah, like you say, poof, it's gone. It's gone. I can't pick up after myself. I cannot pick up after myself.
I find the money piece, the financial piece,
yeah,
disorganization and the actual disorganization, like the house,
yeah,
or the things, is so disrupted. Because if you can get those things in order as a person with ADHD, you feel so much calmer.
Yeah.
But you can't seem to do it.
So there's the like not being able to keep like your, oh, it's the routine. It's very difficult to maintain, to develop a routine and to have any kind of consistency in your life. But the absolute tragedy of that is that we function better within a structured environment.
I always say within structure comes freedom.
Yeah.
For me. I mean, and I find that because I talk with, when I'm mentoring, I talk with a lot of artistic spiritual women,
uh-huh,
who tend to be ADHD,
uh-huh,
type women. Or maybe they do have it. They're often undiagnosed.
Uh-huh.
But they love that when I say that. That really resonates with them. Oh, within structure. Because they think they want freedom, which means lack of structure. But actually, you need the structure in order to have the, you have to house the freedom.
Yeah. 100%, yeah.
So you can actually have it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're everywhere.
Otherwise, it's chaos.
It's chaos.
And chaos is scaring. It's what creates anxiety.
Yes.
And it, yeah. And it's what makes us feel like we're constantly catching up.
Oh, I'm just thinking about like,
sorry, I'm interrupting you.
It's okay. Like I have this consistent argument with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll be going somewhere and I'll just need to know the parameters.
Yep.
Sort of like, when are we leaving?
Yep.
When are we coming home? I don't even need a ton of details in the middle. I just sort of need a start point and an end point. And he's like, we're leaving when we're ready. And we'll come home when we're ready. And I honestly, I tend to actually freeze. I can't help pack. I can't get organized.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, do you have a list? Because could you write down all the things in your head on the list? And then I can like refer to that?
Yeah.
No. And I don't know if we both have something, you know?
Yes.
His thing and my thing are opposing
each other.
But I really can't function in that kind of, I just need a few set points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that goes back to your point of like part of living with this disorder, because that's what it is. It's a,
sure,
whatever you want to call it, a disorder or disability or whatever, this difference is building a sense of self-awareness. This is what I need to function to my best. So I call it the wheelchair ramp for your brain. So like we would not look at someone who used a mobility aid and be like, why can't you just get off of the sidewalk? Like, just do it.
Yes.
Right? Like so many people say to me, why can't you just clean the kitchen? Just clean the kitchen. And I wish I could explain to them, I physically cannot. And I don't know why. But we would never say that. Like, or like to someone that had like type 1 diabetes, like just make insulin. Just do it. Go, what's the wheelchair ramp for your brain? The workaround. What do you need to make that work for yourself? Is it a list? Like for me, when I was going through my MBA and I was like struggling, I hired a house cleaner. It's morally neutral. Those like caretaking tasks at home, like cleaning, doing the dishes, whatever, laundry, it's morally neutral. Does it make you a better or worse person if you can or cannot do them? So hire it out.
Yeah.
Right? Like I got a house cleaner and my house was clean for the first time consistently in my whole entire life. Well, since I got divorced, let's be honest. My ex-husband, we're fine, by the way. It's not like anything wrong with that. But like he's a very like routine, structure, predictability.
He's attractive for those.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. I was like, no, he is good looking. How do you know? It was. So I think was attracted to him because I saw him as being someone who was just like gonna look after me. And I think he was attracted to me because he saw me as this like free spirited. And then of course we get married and then we have a kid and then all of a sudden life happens and the things that we were attracted to in one another became the things that that pulled us apart. So I think that was like really like, the chaos just ensued and we just couldn't, and I didn't have a diagnosis at that point. So I couldn't explain, this is why I am the way that I am. And I had no reason to think it was a workaround. I just thought that I was the way that I was and you're not going to change me.
Well, yeah, but I mean, truthfully, neither in marriage neither party is going to change each other.
No.
It's about self-awareness.
That's right.
And then acceptance.
Yes, but I also had a lot of maladaptive coping mechanisms.
What is that?
Because I didn't have the self-awareness of knowing that some of the choices that I made were dopamine chasing and like impulse control issues, which are totally like, that's ADHD, impulse control. I did things because I didn't realize why I was doing them. And they felt good. And I didn't, I was sad. I was lonely. I was unable to communicate my needs. And I didn't realize that there was so many needs that I had that I needed to meet for my own self. So I did things. And when I say maladaptive, I mean like bad. Okay, like coping mechanisms that really are about self-sabotage.
Yeah. Did your therapist, like, did Devin help you in your sharing? Would he kind of help point out the thing? I mean, definitely, I think it's going to resonate. Everything is going to resonate for a lot of our listeners. And yeah, I think, would he point out the things and help you become aware?
So, yeah. So Devin helped me point out my own things. So the biggest thing that he said to me was, your brain is a toddler. And toddlers need things, right? You need your basic needs. So you need food, water, shelter. You need to feed the toddler. Your toddler brain needs structure and routine. It needs love. And it needs to be told no sometimes.
Right. So we hate ADHD.
Right. You hate no. But when you just say yes to your toddler brain all the time. I think about it. If you said yes to your toddler all the time.
Anarchy.
Absolutely. Like your toddler can't stay up till 4 a.m. That's ridiculous, right? Your toddler can't have everything that your toddler wants. And so for me, it's like, yeah, do I want to spend a bunch of money when I feel sad? Absolutely, I do. But I have to parent my own brain. No, you don't have money to spend frivolously.
We're self-soothing and self-regulation.
Oh,
really comes in here.
Yeah. So
if you have to be able to get from that point to the no to then functioning.
Right.
And not having a tantrum.
That's right. So sometimes I have to have tantrums. Sometimes I just have to not leave my house. I feel like retail therapy is the only answer here. Well, it's never the only answer. So, but it also comes to, like, you mentioned regulation. So people with ADHD have difficulty regulating. Like, it's an impossible thing. So I mean, like, regulating at tasks. Like, I don't know when to stop. Like, so one of the hobbies that I developed was refinishing old furniture, right? I don't know when to stop doing that when I'm hyperfixated on it. I don't know when to stop and come in and make supper. I don't know when to stop gardening and come in and clean my bathroom. I focus on the things I like and just pretend like the things that I don't like are just, that's for another day.
So do you use tools like timers? Like, what do you do to help yourself? I mean, everybody's like, set a timer, block your day.
I just parent my brain. So like what I'll do is, let's say if I'm outside and because I really like working in my garden, if I'm working in my garden or let's say I'm weeding, I'll give myself like, okay, you're going to go up to that point and then you're going to stop. Because I also struggle with all or nothing thinking, another thing with ADHD, and it's part of the regulation. It all has to be done or I have a difficulty starting. And so what I tell myself, and I tell people this all the time, do not look at the top of the mountain. Do not look at that peak. You're not getting to the peak. You're just looking at the trail in front of you and you're just putting one foot in front of the other. And you get where you get, right? So do not look at the peak of the mountain. That's unattainable. So if I'm looking at like that massive chore, like if I've neglected to do the dishes for too many days in a row, don't look at the whole entire job. Can you fill the sink? Can you wash a few things? So
that's interesting. Do you think this is something I tend to
I like to leave one or two dishes.
Yeah, you don't know what that is.
I do not understand the, like, you just like finish the job. I'm like, I feel like I got to the end point.
Yeah.
Like I did this and now there's a few left and I'm just going to leave them. Or like the sink of water with like a few things.
Yeah. What is that?
I don't know.
Do not understand it.
Could or could not be
ADHD related. Oh, I think it is. I think it is, but I don't know what it is. It's like, if you're done it, what's next?
Yeah, maybe that's
nothing. And it's like, that's scary.
That's not a good feeling.
Yeah. Like, what do I do next? Like, do I have to find a new task?
Yeah. Isn't it? It's really interesting.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I mean, so it's a spectrum, right? We aren't going to all be the same. Like, so my partner, he also has ADHD. We're very different. Like, so there's three presentations. I don't know if you know this. So there's hyperactivity, which is like your primary thing. There's inattentiveness. And then there's a combined type, and most women are combined. My partner is inattentive and I'm combined. So what I notice about him is like, he's just not really with me a lot of the time. Like he's like, when he's got something on his mind, he's gone. Like he's gone. And it's very difficult for him to retain information that I'm trying to relay to him when he's not present. And so the wheel turnaround is, we just make sure that we're sitting together and I'm present and he's present and we're making eye contact and he needs to write it down. I'm setting us both up for failure if I'm just like rattling off information when I know he's busy doing something else.
Like, let's quit trying to do things the way everyone does them.
Yeah.
And do what we actually have to do that works for us.
Yeah. 100%. It's also like match made in heaven because he loves cleaning the kitchen.
My husband will just clean that kitchen for
hours. Oh my God. I can't clean the kitchen. Well, I can obviously, but like it takes me so much effort to get in there and get going. And he just does it every day.
I think our partners are very similar because I would say that inattentiveness, and my husband will just like be in the garage and he's just like for hours.
Petsing.
He's learning to like come. He's a petser. He's learning to come check on me now.
Yeah.
So it's not natural for him, but he's decided that this is what he's supposed to do.
Okay.
So he will follow the rule of that.
Great. Love that.
Yeah. So that's the wheelchairs.
That's the wheelchair ramp.
Yeah. Like, okay, my wife says she needs.
That's a really good point, because if you love someone with ADHD, regardless if you have it or not, just understand, like give them grace, give them a lot of forgiveness, because they aren't in control of a lot of these choices. And it's not, it's something they're doing to you. They're not doing it to you. They're just doing it. And so it's not personal. It's not an attack. They're not like, yeah. So like if you come back at them with like anger, resentment, it's just going to create shame, embarrassment, and like a wedge between you. So just like, I remember talking to a woman that works with us as one of our simulated patients. And she was talking about how her husband, she's like, oh, I'm sure he has ADHD. He just leaves all of the cupboard doors open all the time. And I'm like, he doesn't realize it. I'm telling you, he doesn't know he's doing it. Like he opens the cupboard door, grabs what he needs. The cupboard ceases to exist.
Yeah.
And like he's on to the next thing. And she's like, oh, that's so interesting. I'm like, yeah, he's not doing it to you. He doesn't even know he's doing it. So just close the cupboard door.
Yeah.
And she's like, wow. And then she came and updated me a couple months later. She's like, we're happier. I just closed the cupboard door now. I'm like, that's wonderful. It's so easy. Right. Just close the cupboard door. Like, it's just, do you know what I mean?
You see it. So just close it.
He doesn't see it. I'm telling you.
I know, because I leave cardboard boxes in the back, like from Costco.
Yeah.
The big one.
Yep.
My way that I think is I take it, I put it outside.
It's gone.
He's like, one day he's like, are you leaving that there and like waiting for me to finish the job?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I forgot. Like I just,
yeah,
I will do it someday. I just kind of forgot that was a job.
Yep. So okay, literally talk about this for hours. Like it needs to be a new like monthly segment. So object permanence and doom piles. So with ADHD, one of the things is you struggle with object permanence or impermanence. You know when your baby, like you go behind a door and your baby thinks you disappeared? Mm-hmm. We literally have never stopped thinking that. So
The worst thing that my partner can do to me is put a thing I need in a drawer somewhere without like leaving a note about it. Because it's gone. It's gone. So that's why like a place for everything and everything in its place is like the ultimate goal. But like there's so many doom piles because it doesn't have a place and I need to not forget it exists. Bills, things that need to leave the house, a bowl that needs to go to the basement. Do not put it in a cupboard somewhere because it's gone for me. It doesn't exist anymore. So we want to say like everything in its place, a place for everything, everything in its place. And also don't set it down. Don't put it down, put it away. So my Dustin, my partner and I, we get into conflict about this because he's like, I hate the clutter. And I'm like, but if it's not in a doom pile, how will I know what still exists? So he's constantly putting things in drawers and then I have to get a new one.
Yeah.
Because then 6 months later, I'll be like,
but I don't know where the thing went.
Where did the thing go? Yeah. Or like if the thing went to another universe.
Yeah.
It's in a parallel universe where I can't access it.
You're in this universe and you still need it.
You know what I do? So what is this called again? Object
permanence.
So when my husband...
Or impermanence, depending on what you're...
So he used to travel a lot when the kids were young. It was really hard on me.
Mm-hmm.
When she is not in the house, I think he's gone.
Yeah.
Like he's left.
Yeah.
And I get anxiety.
Yeah. Object impermanent. Well, he's an object. Technically. I mean, it's the same thing. Yeah. It's the same thing. It's like when babies, before they develop this like idea of object permanence or impermanence, and you go away, you cease to exist.
I'm like a baby with my husband.
Yeah. Yeah. He's gone. He doesn't exist anymore.
And I think because for a time, for a number of years,
yeah,
he really was gone for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And I did. So there is that also that actually real association.
Time is abstract and money is abstract.
Yeah.
So like we tend to spend money we don't have because it's just a number. There will be more of it. So budgeting is difficult because again, that structure, that's routine, that's planning for a future that is an abstract thing. Time blindness, you're going to be late constantly because 15 minutes doesn't, that's, what is that? What is that? It doesn't exist. Yeah. And so some people are late all the time because they struggle with understanding what like, oh, when I say I have 15 minutes, that means I need to leave the house 10 minutes ago. But for some people, it's the opposite, where if you have, say, a doctor's appointment at 1 o'clock, you're paralyzed for the whole morning.
And then the thing is over. This is what I find so interesting, is then the thing is over and I'm like, oh, I have all this time.
Yeah,
wait,
totally.
I didn't even think about this or plan for this. I was so hyper-fixated on the yeah. thing that I was doing.
Totally.
Or if I get too many things that are big things like this.
So when I say it's a spectrum and we're all different, that's what I mean. Yeah. Because the dysfunction doesn't necessarily like dictate how we are. It dictates the dysfunction. Mm-hmm. And then we're all over the place after that.
So yeah, I find it. Yeah, it's really interesting. I do think it's really like magnificent. Like what are the things that you like about it? I like the visionary piece.
Yeah,
I think really, really big, and that I trust and mm-hmm. I believe good is, you know, I'm very like able to believe for good.
Yeah,
the flow and get into the flow and activate, or sorry, I'm able to get in touch with like my spiritual side really easily.
And yeah,
really feel it.
I'm a problem solver.
Yeah,
so like I am constantly looking for the most efficient way through a problem. And so I think probably this likely annoys my coworkers. And
I think maybe my boss a little bit.
Luckily we are all love each other. But the thing is I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense to do it that way.
Yeah.
But then I'm even saying that about my own. Like if I'm like, hey, we're going to do it this way now. The next time I reevaluate it, I'm like, who did this like this? And it's probably me. But I'm very good at like pattern recognition. Yeah. And so like I'm two steps ahead of you.
Yeah.
One of the things that I felt like so validating is, so I read a study a few years ago about the hunter brain. And so I always talk to myself about my hunter brain. It's really just prey drive. But so there was a study where some researchers went into tribal communities that mostly still function on like hunter-gatherer lifestyle. They identified the individuals within the community that appear to be displaying the symptoms of ADHD and those that seemed neurotypical. And then they researched their hunting abilities. And what they found was the individuals that exhibited symptoms of ADHD were more successful hunters. And so they attributed this to the ability to hyper-focus. And that's really just prey drive. But like the hunter brain allows us to focus on a task that we are interested in because we don't have a choice of where we can't control what we're focused on or where we place our attention. So when you are focused on something, it's a hunter brain. Like for me, I will like, it's like an ability to focus on that one thing and not let go until the thing is done.
Yeah.
So I'm very goal oriented. I'm very, I can problem solve very well. And I'm really good at like pattern recognition. And so like, I actually don't know why I was so good at theater when I was doing it. Because the way that I am now, like doesn't really allow for a lot of, multiple perspectives, but I think that's actually why it was so, it felt so good, is because I was able to live so many different lives, get outside of myself and experience feelings and emotions and realities that I didn't have access to any other way.
Yeah.
And to give that creative side of myself to liberate it.
Yeah.
because now, and I think it's just a function of my job, is that I'm just like one problem after the next, like give them all to me. I'm going to solve them. So I'm a little bit like, I always want to have an axe to grind or like a, I don't know, a job to focus on. An axe to grind makes it seem like I have like, I got a problem. We got to talk about this.
You're going to solve, like, bring me the problem up.
Yeah.
I have a solution for it. Like, you're going to hunt down the solution.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it makes me, like, a really efficient event planner, which is mostly what my job entails, right? Like, I'm just planning events. The events just happen to be, like, educational events for med students.
I love the initial and yeah. Like the big idea, the yeah. intention, the purpose, the mission
behind. But the follow through.
But kind of like day of detail.
Yeah.
I find really overwhelming.
Yeah.
I will forget something.
Yeah.
But I will just trust that it will come together.
Yep.
Which is hilarious when you're working with someone who's actually detail orientated.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh no, we actually have to make sure we have 12 napkins. We have 12 people in.
We'll just get a napkin show seller. Teams with all of those people on them can be very effective teams. But again, you have to work together well. You can't expect the other people to be exactly like you. Like, you have to have really good communication within that team, right? So, like, for you to be the thinker, the ideas person, and then having somebody on that team who's more about the details means that you have all the areas covered, but your detail person can't expect you to be on the details. So they need to know that they have to be.
They have to be on the details.
Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely love teams. Mm. Figure out who's doing what and just having this amazing thing happen.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where we fall short is if you're an entrepreneur who has ADHD mm-hmm. or you're kind of a one-man show
yeah.
in charge of your own income and you have that, it's really hard to manage all those parts and
yeah.
pieces. And I guess that's kind of where I would say that I would struggle is when I'm kind of... Like with my photography, I do the whole thing. Now it's good. I've been doing it for 25 plus years.
Yeah.
But I think I'm excited at the start.
Yeah.
And then you kind of lose interest in the things that aren't like giving you the dopamine hit.
That's right. Yeah. So yeah. You need novel things. You need challenging things. There's an acronym and we came up with an acronym at work. It's dirty. So I'm not going to use it here.
That's what we said.
So okay. Challenging, unique.
Oh, I know. Okay. I see where we're going with this.
Yeah. I think novel. And then we were like, and tinteresting.
Tinteresting. Yeah.
That's wanted exactly one that we would remember, but it's something else. I don't remember.
I'll never forget now. I'll never forget that.
So like novel things. So if it's new and unique, then that's going to be like, oh, wow, like something shiny. Challenging, because that's that problem solving. You're like, oh, I'm gonna really dig into this. Like somebody said I couldn't do it, so now I definitely will. And interesting for us, for our own brains, because we can't always control what we focus on, right? Like I probably should know more about certain like details at my job, but I timesheets or my time card, like at the end of every 2 weeks, like my boss and I have this like running joke. It's such a mundane task.
Oh yeah.
It literally takes 12 seconds.
Yeah.
But do you think I can remember to do it ever without being reminded? No. No.
Get your timesheeted, Christina.
Yeah. Okay. I hear you, Corinne. I got it.
Hey.
But it's not going to happen. So.
Yeah. My solution, my wheelchair ramp or anything like that is do it now. And another trick, one thing I do is I pin all my messages that I haven't responded to, like through text. I just drag them to the top and I know that those are ones I need to respond to, but I'll get back to them whenever.
That's great.
And that's like one of my wheelchair ramps.
That's great.
Yeah. I have so many, like my system and my email, like my starring system versus my unread system.
Yes.
All those things that we have to just do it now in order to, you know, we'll thank future Tammy, we'll thank for doing that.
Yeah.
And then that I think that's how I function as a business owner and keep my clients happy, is that I have these really specific to me.
Yeah. And you figured out what works. Yeah. 100%.
What works. Yeah.
And that's so important. It's so important. Like if I knew the do it now thing when I was married, there would be so many more parking tickets that I would pay. So like it's the ADHD tax, right? You forget to pay a parking ticket. You forget to pay a speeding ticket. You forget to pay bills. And then all of a sudden, these things become so much more expensive.
Because usually those tasks are... So for me, it's like, if it's under 2 minutes, do it now. You know, if it's kind of over 2 minutes, I'll flag it or do a different do it now. I'll still do something so it doesn't get lost and forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of that too is that there's a big payoff for me. Like I really like having my clients happy.
Yeah.
So I think you have to always also figure out what drives you.
Yeah.
Because for me, I want to have money in my account.
Right.
I want my partner to be happy.
Yeah.
I want my clients to be happy. So I have that people-pleasing piece, which you don't, you know, we're all trying to figure out how to not be people-pleasers.
Yeah.
But there are aspects of being a people-pleaser that really are great for running it.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, like, yes, all of those things that you listed really just... When you break them down at their core, it's really just about the how those things reflect on you.
It is.
But you could argue that that's about integrity as well. You want your clients to be happy because it matters to you that you do a good job at your job.
Totally.
If you didn't want your clients to be happy, what kind of a professional would you be?
Why would I be doing it?
Yeah. If you didn't care about how your actions impacted your partner, what kind of a spouse would you be?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think integrity matters.
Yeah. My mom always said there's two things that no one can ever take away from you, your reputation and your integrity. And she's right.
You can only ruin your reputation.
That's right. By not paying your parking tickets.
By not paying your parking tickets. Okay, I think that's really great for today.
Now, the thing that I want to say is if you do want a diagnosis, because I've heard this, and then this is the last thing I'm going to say is your family physician can diagnose you. So if you get told that you need to see a psychiatrist or some others, but you don't, you do not. Your family physician can diagnose you, and you can go to the CADAC website, CADAC, and all of the assessment forms are available. So there's the pediatric assessment forms, which include a parent and a teacher. And then there's the adult assessment forms, which you do for yourself. And so...
is a really fun, long, long list that people with ADHD love.
Yeah.
For a long list of questions to answer about yourself.
That's right. I'm just trying to be honest.
Just anyway, now.
Yeah, just do it.
Do it
and then take that to your doctor. And if diagnosis means something to you,
sure,
do that.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. Thank you so much. You have so much knowledge.
That's because I hyperfixated on ADHD when I was diagnosed. And I was like, I'm going to start feeling better. Gosh darn it. And I did.